County in rides that are 5, 12, 20, 40, or 62 miles long. Experience the beauty of our parks, woods, and shoreline. Enjoy music and food at the Green Fair after the rides, and learn about the important work of participating groups. To register, visit rocktorock.org.
Here's some important public health information regarding the coronavirus. COVID-19 is a novel strain of the coronavirus. It is a respiratory virus that can spread from person to person. So far, we know that the coronavirus looks a lot like other respiratory viruses.
Do you hear the music? Were you able to hear the music?
No.
People with COVID-19 sometimes get fevers, a cough, or have trouble breathing. Most people who get sick from coronavirus start to feel these symptoms between 2 and 14 days.
Okay, I can hear it now.
The virus.
No, that's
most
just myself.
Most people who have COVID-19 coronavirus get better just by resting, drinking fluids, and taking fever medicine. For people who get sicker, they might need to go to the hospital. There is no medicine or vaccine that works.
You've got a nice view, Harry, if that
coronavirus is spread through the air when someone who is sick coughs or sneezes, or through close personal contact.
It's like nightfall at the New Haven Green. That's interesting.
It could also spread when a person touches an object that has coronavirus on it, then touches their mouth, nose, or eyes.
Harry, I wonder if it's because your microphone is muted.
The spread of the coronavirus,
yeah, that's what it is.
The
thing is, I'm on two different machines.
I'd like you not to be, I think it's fine for you to be unmuted for all the shows.
Try not to touch your eyes, nose, or mouth if you haven't washed your hands. Try to stay away from people who are sick. If you are sick, stay home and try to stay away from other people. Always cover your mouth and nose with a tissue or your sleeve when you cough or sneeze. If you get any coronavirus symptoms,
you're listening to Dateline New Haven with Paul Bass. His guests today are Patricia Melton and Will Ginsberg.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome in our new brave new era of remote radio. And welcome to Dateline New Haven at WNHH, your home for community radio. We have two great guests this morning, one of whose pictures did just disappear. We hope to get her back. And we have big news. We actually have two pieces of big news to report this morning for you on Dateline New Haven. Say good morning to Will Ginsberg, the president and CEO of the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven. Welcome, Will. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to see you, even if it's remotely. I'd much rather be sitting in your studio, but I'm delighted to be with you.
Same here. And Patricia Melton, president and CEO of New Haven Promise. Patricia,
good morning.
We don't see it anymore. I don't know why that is. Maybe Harry can help us figure out. Good morning, Patricia. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you? Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. I'm sorry I can't see you because I always love when you're around. But anyway, so we got two pieces of news this morning, folks. One of them has to do with the broader picture of how New Haven as a community is going to come together to help people with the very real pain people will experience in the coming months as we're sheltered at home during the spread of the coronavirus, COVID-19. So that's the kind of medium-term crisis and challenge in our community. And we're going to hear today from Will about a board meeting last night at which the foundation has decided how they're going to help take the lead in our community, and we can all unite to take this challenge on. And meanwhile, before the crisis hit, there were already plans in the works for Community Foundation to up its support for a program it helped start in the first place in New Haven. And that was New Haven Promise, where every New Haven Public School student who shows up to work, gets involved in the community, and gets at least a C average, gets tuition largely paid for, and is able to attend Connecticut colleges and universities. There's a major new initiative on that score to up our game and what is already a successful program. And Harry, I noticed your audio is off. I'm wondering, given the problems we had beforehand, yeah, if you just keep it on so we don't have any problems with the radio. Is that cool? Thanks. That's anyway, fine. Good morning, folks. So, Will, let's start off with you had a board meeting last night at the Community Foundation, correct? Or was it not at the Community Foundation? Was it remote?
It was remote, but we managed to, with a couple of interruptions, have a three-hour board meeting to talk about, almost entirely about COVID-19. And I'll address that in a second. I will say, Paul, at the outset, again, I'm delighted to be with you and with Patricia, my colleague and friend. It's an extraordinary moment we're in. So even as we are focusing on the immediate term challenges, unprecedented challenges that our community is facing, we are also continuing to think about the long-term investments that we, the foundation, and our community needs to make to build the best future for Greater New Haven and for the people who will live here over the next generations. And that's where Promise comes in. In terms of COVID-19, you know, I would say this, first by way of introduction, you know, I think this is a crisis for our nonprofit sector and for the people that the nonprofit sector serves, unlike any we've seen in this community or indeed in this country. We've been talking to nonprofits for the last, over the last couple of weeks about this, as this situation has been accelerating. We've been talking to the healthcare institutions and the mental health institutions and the basic needs providers, the food providers and the shelter providers. They're on the front lines. They're facing huge demands, and they're only going to get bigger. We've been talking to lots of organizations that are trying to operate remotely and don't have the infrastructure to do that and need to invest in that. We're talking to lots of organizations that have had to cancel their fundraisers and fundraising plans. So it is not an exaggeration to say that there are organizations all across our community, from basic needs providers to arts and culture institutions and everything in between, that are facing an existential crisis here. Can they survive? Can they do their work, and can they survive through this? So here's what the Community Foundation is doing, based coming out of our board meeting last evening, and you should actually have. We sent out a press release just minutes ago. You should have it, Paul. If you don't, you will. We have identified over $2 million of funds that we can put out immediately, into this community. That's not the sum total of what we're going to do, but that's what we can do in the immediate term. We are creating a Greater New Haven COVID-19 Community Fund in partnership with our friends at United Way of Greater New Haven. We're gonna work with United Way both to reach out to our respective donor bases to support the fund and to make joint decisions. We felt it was in the best interest of our community, both the nonprofits and the donors, to have one fund, not multiple funds, working on these critical issues. The foundation itself is putting over $1 million into that immediately. We've raised close to $500,000 from donors in the last 48 hours, and we've identified another $500,000 in foundation assets, both current assets and out of our endowments that can go into, because we have endowments that are for public health, and we have the ability to go into those in extraordinary times. So we are taking those extraordinary measures in these extraordinary times. So that's $1 million from the foundation side going in. United Way is fundraising as well for that.
So is United Way putting in $1 million and you're putting in $1 million?
No, I can't speak to what United Way is putting in. We're putting $1 million into the fund. In addition, the additional money that I referred to, because I said more than $2 million. So we have about $1 million in general operating support grants that are already made, that were made last year, multi-year grants that were made last year, or in some cases the year before, that were scheduled to go out later this year. They're scheduled to be paid in the fall. We are accelerating those, not requiring the reports that we would normally require. We're accelerating those. That's about additional $1 million. And our plan is to get those out to those grantees by the end of next week. So that's $1 million that, as I said, in normal circumstances, we would have distributed in the fall. after receiving our monitoring reports and the usual processes. Those are going out immediately. We hope to have dollars in people's hands, that $1 million by the end of next week.
So, let me just recap for people. You're listening to Dateline New Haven, 103.5 live streamed at newhavenimplant.org. We're with Will Ginsberg of the Community Foundation, Patricia Melton from New Haven Promise, about two big initiatives from both organizations, one in the immediate term of crisis for our community, and the other the long term of helping our scholars, our students, succeed in life. Will Ginsberg has just announced that the Community Foundation has teamed up with the United Way to create a new single community fund for basic emergency needs. Community Foundation has identified over $1 million to put into that, and the Community Foundation is additionally freeing up $1 million it was planning to release later this year to grantees for general operating support without requiring reports. It's getting it out there by the end of next week, and that fundraising is now going on. So, Will, tell me about this new fund you're doing with the United Way. How large is it altogether, including your million, and how will it work, and what will it do?
Yeah, let me address one other point before I do that, Paul. In addition to the two things that I mentioned and that you just mentioned, there's an additional $400,000 or so, which is grants we've made over the last year or two, in some cases, to nonprofits for specific program purposes. They applied for specific programs that we're supporting. We are saying to those grantees, if you want to repurpose that money for general support to deal with COVID-19, we invite you to make that request to us. So that's an additional $400,000 that we could get out for general operating support to deal with COVID-19.
Great, and Patricia's back on the air. I hope you're okay there. I hope that was just a random cough.
It is a random cough. I have asthma, so I may cough periodically.
All right. anything else before we turn to Promise?
Just to your question. To your question, I think, you know, we view this as a first tranche, and United Way obviously needs to speak for themselves, but I know that they are reaching out to all their donors and both through their workplace giving channels and through their donor relationships to raise money for this as well. So what this fund will ultimately look like, you know, I don't know in terms of dollars, and indeed how deep or longstanding this crisis will be, we don't know. What we do know is that the community, as I said before, the nonprofit sector and the community in general, the for-profit sector, layoffs, needs, we're in a crisis situation, and we need the philanthropic sector to act now. Our nonprofit sector needs support now. And so we have freed up over $2 million to get out to nonprofits now.
That is great news.
Remains to be seen.
Big news, great news. So how's this fund going to work? Do people apply to it?
In the first instance, we are going to be, we being United Way and Community Foundation working together, staff working together. In the first instance, we're actually not going to require applications. We're going to reach out to agencies that we know are on the front lines of this battle, agencies that we know need support to fight the COVID-19 fight. We're going to be reaching out to them. So we don't want to burden them with the need to apply. We're going to be reaching out to them and finding out what they need, what they're facing, and take that information and make decisions about how much support we can provide to them.
Well, I have to say, speaking individually, I can think of no one I trust more than the Community Foundation United Way, with your track record every year of funding such essential services and helping our nonprofit sector take care of people. You guys know where the work is being done, who's doing it. You've been in touch with them for years, and now it's crunch time.
One other thing I can mention, and this is something you know a lot about because you've been so helpful to us every year. So in the spring, we do the Great Give every year, and it's scheduled for May 5th and 6th. We made a decision this week to continue to do the Great Give. Our nonprofits need it perhaps more in 2020 than in any previous year. The messaging may change to make it more about COVID-19. We may restructure how we do it in certain ways. You know, it may not be a competition in the same way that it's been, but it's a wonderful opportunity for over 400 nonprofits in this community to get out in front of a big donor audience. Last year, the Great Give produced $1.8 million from over 12,000 donors. So we are going to do the Great Give this year, and we think it can be a very powerful way of providing resources that the nonprofit community needs in this crisis situation.
Okay, well, and let your staff know, please, that the WNHH radio will be on board for, again, doing a radiothon. There might be some blips in it, but we're going to have everybody who wants to come on the air, make their pitch, because I know people are dying to help. Now, Patricia Melton, how's with New Haven Promise? I understand there's a big announcement that's going to be your next step. What was that all about?
Well, we were able to apply for a five-year, multi-year grant from the Community Foundation. As you know, the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven has been a supporter and was one of the anchor funders and has been critical for us to develop our programming. And so we will have stable funding from them over the next 5 years, and we're part of their inclusive growth strategy. As you know, our byline is two through and back. We create that college-going culture throughout the city. Then we support our scholars while they're in college to make sure that they're, you know, focused on getting into their career pathways without wasting time so that they will finish college on time. And then we keep them connected to the city so that they can launch their career and civic lives back here in the city. So we couldn't be more pleased with the fact that the Community Foundation has supported us and continues to support us so that we can do this collective work together.
So how much money did you get committed? And we'll talk about it when you're done. What was this five-year commitment?
$1.3 million, which is wonderful.
Oh, no, not
is that each year, Will? Oh, great.
So $1.3 million over 5 years means that you can keep your staff employed.
Oh, absolutely. It's our program.
What does that go toward?
Well, that goes towards our work in the schools. It also goes towards, you know, making sure that our scholars are successful while they're in college, and it goes towards helping them to launch their career in civic lives. So as you know, we have a very robust paid internship program, as well as we're now working with the major employers to make sure our scholars are getting hired in the city and in these institutions that are looking for the best talent.
And how much money does New Haven Promise distribute a year in scholarships?
Well, this year we distributed $4.1 million.
And where does that money come from?
The scholarship portion, the majority of it, really 99% of it comes from Yale University. And we have some reserve funds from another donor, but primarily the scholarship comes from Yale University at this point.
And are they committed for the next 5 years?
Well, we're in negotiations with them, but yes, we do a multi-year agreement. So our agreement is up for renewal here in the next year.
Okay, so basically your people who work for you in New Haven Promise, and you don't just give out scholarships, you also work with families as soon as they enter kindergarten, knocking on their doors when there's not a COVID-19 crisis, letting them know early on about if you think college at the beginning of your academic career, we're going to help you and guide you, give you that support. And then once they get the scholarships, and one thing I've always loved about what you do, Patricia, because of your own personal experience, is the keeping intact for people to know if they face once they're in college so that they stay there. So it sounds to me that you're guaranteeing that your staff is employed for the next 5 years and you're going to be helping these thousands of New Haveners.
Yes, I mean, at this point, we have three major anchor funders, and they've been there from the beginning. Once again, the Community Foundation, where we were incubated. I mean, I was an employee of the Community Foundation for my first 4 years in New Haven, and so was our staff. So, you know, that was really critical, but it really took a partnership. So Yale University funds the scholarship, and Yale New Haven Hospital also funds a lot of our work in terms of the things that we do, like what you just mentioned, making sure that families know about the scholarship and that we're working very closely with the schools. So it's really a collective effort of a number of our different anchor funders. And now we're really in a position to make sure that we can bring everyone into the equation, really reaching out to the business community to make sure that businesses are involved. And because the whole point of Promise was to make sure we have an educated workforce that really aligns to the needs of our city here in New Haven in the 21st century.
And but just before I go back to Will, I want to ask you about how your organization and the students you work with are rolling with COVID-19. So all these kids are not going to have commencement this year, probably. Are they going to be able to graduate on time? And specifically, what kind of work are you doing day by day with students who get your scholarships or are about to make sure they make it to college and stay in college?
Was that a question for me?
Yeah. What day by day, what's happening? Yes, are you on the phone with people? How's it working?
Yeah. So we will be reaching out. I mean, as you know, most of the colleges, the students are on spring break. So those college classes have moved online. And so we've been sort of thinking with our staff, you know, how can we support our students? As you know, many of our students are first generation college. So we're working and advocating with the colleges on how these students can be supported. They will continue to be able to access support services, tutoring services. Obviously, that all goes online. But I also see that this is a challenge that's an important challenge for our students who are leaders in their community. Remember, every student, every one of our scholars completed 40 hours of community service. So this is a caring group. They care about their city. They will now be at home. And so they will be able to not only do their studies, but also help out with their younger siblings who are out of K through 12 school. So we really see that our scholars will not only be able to address their needs, and we will make sure in working with the higher ed institutions that they're getting supported, but they can also be a support for their families now in terms of their younger siblings. So
I always love the holistic way you approach this job, Patricia.
I'm so happy that you always came back.
So happy you came back to New Haven, that you stayed in New Haven. You're listening to Dateline New Haven, 103.5 FM, livestreamnewhaven.org. I'm going to ask you a question, Patricia, and then push it back to Will.
Yes.
So one thing that's been on my mind in the past week is how the move to a virtual community is going to affect the communities that have the least access or familiarity with online communication. So in your case, Patricia, your scholars in some cases being first generation in higher ed, coming disproportionately perhaps from lower income families, what special help do they need from you or our community so that they can continue to access online learning, meet their requirements, and not fall behind?
Well, I would say that our scholars are in a very advantageous position. It doesn't mean that they don't need help. And we will, again, working with our higher ed institutions, you know, even though things have moved online, that means the tutoring moves online. That means that one-on-one meetings move online. I don't really see a disruption there. But, you know, again, I think that our scholars are pretty well equipped. They all have computers. They have to have
computers.
In college. So at least we know that our scholars who will be transitioning to home will have those computers. And so they can be a resource. I mean, I really look at, we have about 800, yeah, well, really, if we think of our scholars who are out of state, you know, there are probably about 1,200 scholars who are going to be coming back into the city. They're going to be coming back with resources that will be able to help their families. And we see ourselves in the position of being able to not only encourage them and support them, but really to help them to see how they can step into a leadership role as a solution to help out with their families in terms of, you know, the younger siblings, because many of our scholars do come from households that are, you know, not one other sibling or two, it could be two, three, or four other siblings. So they're going to be critical resources that should not be overlooked.
All right. Well, Patricia Milton, again, I always admire the broad view you take. You're thinking not just, as you just said, about helping the students continue to do their work, but how to come be part of the community and help their families. Will Ginsberg, you and I have talked in the past about digital literacy, how with tech revolution in our country, in our world, the one big goal for our organization and your organization is to help people function well and get good information and interact online. Has the foundation thought about any of that in this COVID-19 crisis?
Well, yes, we have. I mean, I think that the challenge is digital literacy, and it's broader than that, Paul. The world is changing. The skills that people need to interact, as you say, and communicate, the skill, whether we're in a COVID-19 crisis or not, the skills that people need to to be productive and to be employed in the economy of today and the economy of tomorrow are vastly different than they used to be not very long ago. So, you know, I want to tie this back to our longer term vision, because we are utterly consumed at the moment with the immediate term and the crisis that our community is facing and that our country is facing and the world is facing and our nonprofit sector is facing. But we have at the foundation have developed a new strategic plan over the last year, a new vision for what we need to do in this community as our priority. We call it opportunity for all through inclusive growth. We need to grow the economy and we need to deal with exactly the kind of issues Patricia was just talking about and you're asking about to make sure that the opportunities that are created in this community in the coming years over the next generation are that all residents in this community have the skills and the training in terms of digital literacy and many other things to access those opportunities.
So that's why back for a second, and yeah, and that's a great long-term vision. I've been reading about, as we all have, that the federal government's about to send trillions of dollars into communities to put that money in people's hands. I was just speaking to someone close to me in California who said, well, she is a gig worker. Are people like her? And I'm thinking about people even another step. People don't even have gig work. How are they going to get these benefits if they're not computer savvy? If people are stuck at home and money, and supposedly the federal government is getting emergency cash into their hands, how are they going to get it? Are they going to need special help from Will's group and Patricia's group, whether it's college aid in Patricia's case, or whether it's just the money you're getting in your welfare benefits, your food stamps, or just the Andrew Yang cash that's coming from Washington? What role are you folks going to play in that?
I don't know yet. You know, this is happening at breakneck speed and everything's changing. And a big part of what needs to happen, of course, is coordination between private philanthropy and government on this. You mentioned the government's role. And I'm in a group that's working at Governor Lamont's request to create a coordinating mechanism between private philanthropy and what government is doing. So, but I think the questions you're asking are the right questions. I don't think answers exist yet. I don't even think we understand the problem yet. I mean, all of us. No one has been through a situation like this before, where you can't get that kind of a check through the traditional channels necessarily. But I do think the basic point that, particularly in an environment like this, but even more generally, that if you don't have access to digital literacy and online communication, you are more and more left out of the mainstream of what's happening in this, more and more unemployable and more left out of mainstream of what's happening in society is a very important point. People have been talking about the digital divide when I was in the U.S. Commerce Department 25 years ago. So this is not a new issue, but it's only gotten more dramatic. And COVID-19, I think, underscores it, six underscorings, maybe.
Yeah. You know, Patricia said something that's really sticking in my mind here. So when I first asked you two of these questions, I'm thinking about the people who need the most help online. Patricia, were you kind of suggesting all your scholars have computers, even if they're first generation? They're
yes,
only late
they
in. And you talked about
yes, they are.
Back to being sort of leaders in the community here. Maybe rather than needing you, I'm sure in some cases they will, but rather than needing you to link them to what they're going to personally get online, maybe they're going to be the people linking their families to the kind of help I'm suggesting they need to connect to the bureaucracies online. Maybe you've already empowered them and they're going to be able to help their families access this. What do you think?
Well, I think when you have major disruptive crises like this, lots of innovation does happen. And so, you know, as I was thinking, and I think as they've been thinking, they want to do something. I mean, they're in college, they're developing their leadership skills, you know, all that is here and now a real life situation that is impacting the world. It's just not impacting our community. And they are positioned. What have they been learning in school? They've been learning about what leadership is. They have been doing all sorts of things online. They are connected. Every last one of our scholars who is in college is connected. So they do have the skills to be able to be that conduit and that connection for their families. You know, what I worry about are what about the families that do not have students in college? So, you know, when I think about what our families can do and our scholars can do, they can be that conduit for their families. I think, you know, as we think about where are the gaps, I would say the gaps are those families that don't have children or elderly that we're going to have to really address as a city. But I don't really worry about our students because they are resourceful. They are connected to institutions that they're going to get support from, and that will trickle down. And not just trickle down, they will have those supports there for them, and they will be able to share that with their families.
Well, it's interesting. So and thank you both for joining me today. I think this shows not only that at moments of crisis, we have great institutions and people ready to step up and help us deal with it, but the work you've done over the years quietly now comes into play. And we just saw an example right there. You have a whole generation of young people now who are able to come home and take leadership and help families in need, their own and their neighbors. So I want to thank you both. Before we sign off, what do you want our listeners to do? Is there a website you want them to go to donate money? Do you want them to volunteer time? Patricia and Will, let us know what you want our readers to do, listeners and readers to do.
I would say for us, just watch our Facebook page. You know, we will be communicating. We have a very large Facebook following, so we're online. We're very well positioned, and we will be communicating what our scholars need and what those families need.
All right, Will.
The Greater New Haven COVID-19 Community Fund, which we've established, which we've announced this morning, and which we are partnering with United Way on, can be accessed at www.cfgnh.org/COVID-19 fund. And I hope that members of this community, as some of our lead donors have already stepped up with almost $500,000 just in the last 48 hours, I hope members of our community understand the gravity of the situation that our service providers and frontline organizations are facing. I know it's a very difficult time for everybody, and to ask for money is hard when people are facing possible unemployment and can't get to work. But the community, this is a moment when the community needs to step up, and I hope people will do that.
Well, thank you both for stepping up. Thank you for joining us today on WNHA.
Thank you, Paul.
Dateline New Haven. I want to thank Will Ginsberg and Patricia Melton for coming on the air today and for doing the great work you do in the community. You show real leadership, and we're all going to benefit and work together. Thanks to Harry Droz, the miracle man behind the control, our station manager, the bravest man in New Haven, who manages to be in front of the green at sunset at all hours during this crisis. Harry Droz, the way to go.
Patricia, Paul, thank you both. Yep.
Likewise. Stay safe, everyone.
And if technology works, we're going to take it out as usual with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you
Bye,
to fly
everyone.
Free with
Stay
us
safe.
All weekend long here at WNHH FM. There it is, your home for community radio.